things like here today. I think having looked at the title of the conference, Nutrition for Olympians, I thought, well, rather than just sort of talking generally about health drinks and sports drinks, I'd get sort of right into the heart of what's very important for Olympians in terms of nutrition, and particularly when considering sport nutrition supplements, about which ones are safe. And there's been a lot of talk over the years, you know, cases where athletes tested positive and blamed it on sports nutrition. And so as an industry, we've really had to tighten up, and I wanted to sort of just demonstrate to you today what it is that we do in terms of our sports supplements. But I thought actually what might be quite useful just to begin with is just to give you a very brief overview of the fitness food and drink category, because I think it just helps you to get it in perspective as just how large it is these days. It's not just something that's sort of taken by bodybuilders, but actually it's really much more normalised than that now. And we have a £500 million fitness food and drink category, which is any product nutritional supplement positioned as an aid for the body in sports training or exercise. We then have this super category splits into sports drinks and sports nutrition. And you can see the sports drinks there, your Lucozade, your Mars Refuel type drinks, Powerade, 275 million, and then sports nutrition is 300 million. This is for the UK. And this is really being driven by changes in consumer behaviour. So we've got much more mass sports participation events, people doing triathlons, marathons, you know, you name it. But people are much more engaged in terms of these types of activities, recognising that they've got very sedentary lifestyles and we need to sort of combat that by participating in these sports. There's much more mainstream usage, and also interestingly what's being picked up is that there's been an explosion of interest in the male image. So people are much more, men are much more concerned about image and how they look, so they're more likely to take these types of supplements. We've got developments within the categories, we've got a lot more... So you've got an explosion of new entrants into this category. You go into any sports supplement store, you'll see a massive range, but also it's coming into mainstream stores like Boots, Tesco's, you know, actually every supermarket you can go into and find these types of products, as well as on the internet. There's a lot more product innovation, and people are really sort of looking at convenience offerings about how we can get, particularly protein, this is really where our business is based. Is around how we can get some convenient protein offerings. You know, I found it really interesting this morning that a previous speaker talking about the importance of skeletal muscle. And really that's what our business is based around, is trying to bring the importance of that to people and how you can exercise and keep that muscle mass. So for us, actually, interestingly, we're seeing the category moving from sport nutrition to active nutrition. So a much bigger and wider category, and really bringing the importance of protein to life for people and talking about muscle and how important that is to sustain us through days of life, because if we're going to have all this medical intervention to help us to live longer, you know, I want my quality of life to be good as well. I don't want to be sat for the last 25 years in a wheelchair because I can't move. And there's just two broad categories within this, the fuel and fitness performance, which is very much carbohydrate-led, and as I said, where the Maxim Nutrition business is very much protein-led, so it's much more around body shape and muscle performance. I think at that point, I just need to explain, actually. GSK, GlaxoSmithKline, acquired Maxim Nutrition business last year. So Maxim Nutrition has the Maxim Muscle, Maxim Fuel, Maxim Tone brands. I was with the Maxim Nutrition business and moved across to GSK with the acquisition. And they've created, so the research side of the business is led from GSK House in Brentford, and there's three categories. So functional beverages looks after Lucozade brand, and then adult specialist nutrition looks after this protein category, so the Maxim Nutrition brands. So that just sort of explains a little bit where I am. So this just shows you how GSK brands cover the entire spectrum of the consumer needs, right from fuel and fitness performance through to the body shape and muscle performance. So people who right, looking at sort of fuel for exercise, football and things like that, right through to your bodybuilders. And then also just, as I mentioned, sort of much more around protein for muscle. And really, you know, like our Maxitone brand, which is for females, it's very much about supporting exercise. So it's everything's very much around sport and activity. I'll just show you a video, a consumer video. Oops. It sounds a bit pathetic, isn't it? Is there any...
Put your microphone by the speaker. Put your microphone on there.
Put this one.
I have got it linked up, though. It should... Upset it now.
I'm not an AV man, but it's
CEO of the...
Tell me you can do it all. That's it.
People using their products right through from elite athletes through to everyday users. But just sort of focusing on what we want to today, you know, just to give you an idea of some of the elite sport relationships that the business has. And actually, I need to update this now because obviously across the GSK brands, this would be much greater. And really when it comes down to sort of the efficacy around the products, you know, everything's treated in the same way. So that's really what I want to sort of lead on and talk to you about now. I think really, for me, it's just quite important to just go through the sort of process that we go through in terms of new product development. So we're very much starting around the science and the claims backed by strong science. GSK actually have more than 150 peer-reviewed scientific publications, and that's mainly around the Lucozade brand. But what's exciting for the Maxim Nutrition business is that funding will then be there to develop science-backed claims for those products as well. But in terms of the regulatory scene, you know, the nutrition health claims regulation has really changed things very dramatically, and I think we're going to see that more than ever this year as the EFSA opinions are written to law, and you know, particularly around October time this year, you know, sport nutrition products in particular will change a lot because a lot of the claims that have been made will no longer be able to be made. So that's going to be, you know, I think that's a really good, I think it's levelling the whole playing field. I think it's right that it's happening. I think that there's a lot of work that needs to be done in terms of providing more evidence around claims so that we can make the sort of claims that we want to, because I think there are some very good ingredients out there. But more work obviously needs to be done in that area. I'll keep an eye on time, so I'll keep whizzing through. I think the great thing is of having a business like GSK, a pharma-based business, we have a whole toxicology team. They don't just sort of sit and accept what's out there, they review everything. So they do a safety review on all the ingredients we want to put into products, and we'll give their opinions on what levels we're allowed to use, and that's based around available evidence. We also have a legal team, which is very useful in terms of patent infringement, making sure we've got freedom to operate in the area that we want to. And then, obviously, more importantly, moving on from there, you know, to the consumer, is there a benefit, is there a need to these ingredients, and most importantly for our consumers, is does it taste good? And then, obviously, a lot of rigour around product quality, micro testing, nutritional testing, shelf life and stability work. But just moving on to the subject I want to sort of spend a bit more time talking to you about today is the area around bound substance testing. So The business is unique in that every batch of every product is tested for banned substances. And I just sort of want to talk a little bit why we have that need, feel that need to do, to sort of have that amount of rigour around our products. I think just two things to really touch on today, mainly that's around inadvertent contamination of products and also a whole sort of area around litigation. So I think a lot of what's happened is that it's been very easy for people, for athletes in the past to sort of blame it on sports nutrition supplements because they're an easy scapegoat, and there hasn't been any way of proving that there isn't, that hasn't been the cause. And maybe in some cases it has. But by sort of taking the approach that we have, we're sort of in a much better position to be able to support that. This is some work that was conducted by HFL and actually part funded by GSK back in 2007-2008. And you can see here the number of supplements are tested in the US. There's 58 products, found a 25% chance of contamination, 25% of this was steroids, and a low percentage of stimulants. And a similar study done in the UK with a larger number of supplements, you can see that there's still a very high percentage of contamination. So really, sort of, what sort of level of contamination is going to cause a failed drug test? So they did a study, some administration studies, where they actually administered different levels of norandrosterone, 5, 2.5, and 1 micrograms, and then collected urine samples and analysed this for nandrolone metabolites. And bearing in mind that the WADA threshold is 2 nanograms per mil or 0.002 micrograms per mil in urine. And you can see here that 75% of volunteers failed the test of, with 5 micrograms, 25 to 2.5 micrograms, but 0 with 1 microgram. So this helped to set the levels around the HFL testing of what levels we needed to be looking at. So we say, yes, that's the threshold, so anything above that could potentially cause a positive test. So just to put it in perspective, if you've got a contamination of 10 nanograms per gram, and you give a 100-gram serving of that product, then that's going to give you a 1-microgram dose in that particular serving. So that just helps to sort of, it helped us to get the levels that we needed to test that. So generally, the level of contamination in supplements is very low, so you're looking at the parts per billion level. And actually, if you looked at, compared that with impurity levels in pharma levels, it's actually way more sensitive. So you're looking at 50,000 times more sensitive level of testing. So that again helps you to understand what sort of levels we're looking at here. The sources of contamination tended to be raw materials, so contamination at source. So it was very important to make sure who knew your raw material suppliers were. But also what tended to be happening was in the manufacturing process, so particularly around capsules and tablets or supplements, where you've got third-party manufacturers manufacturing different products for different people. If they didn't know that they were then manufacturing a supplement which is going into a sort of sports nutrition market and haven't got the sort of the right clean-down methods, then there's potential for cross-contamination at that level. And at the time, HFL were also working very closely with UK anti-doping to sort of work out, well, what do we need to do? Because, you know, it's very difficult to go out and say that something's completely safe, but what we needed to do was have a risk management approach. So UCAD was sort of saying, well, at one time they said, just don't take sport nutrition supplements, but, you know, it's very difficult to sort of say, well, what's a sport nutrition supplement and what's not? And there needed to be a better way because actually a lot of these athletes, you know, when you start to look at the sort of nutritional needs that they have, it's very hard to start, you know, to get everything from just everyday foods, particularly the lifestyles that they're leading. So what UCAD were proposing that was it was okay to take products as long as they have been tested for banned contaminants by a credible lab, but also to really make sure that we've got much more of a robust system, so it wasn't just about checking the end product, but making sure that actually we sort of checked everything down the supply chain. So Informed Sport was set up, which is a quality assurance program for sport nutrition products. It certifies that supplements have been actually tested, and you can go along to the website, get a lot more information, but actually what you can find on there is any product with the Informed Sport logo on there. You can go to the website, check the batch number, and you can actually see the certificate analysis for that batch. As I've mentioned, HFL is the sports line, is the one the company that set up the Infinite Sport Programme. They're actually part of the LGC group now, which is a government testing laboratory. And they've had a lot of experience in doping control and screen for the substances on the WADA list. So you can go to that link and find out more information. This is their website. What's interesting is that having done more testing recently, the risk has been reduced from 1 in 4 to less than 1 in 100, which still sounds like a lot. But actually, the difference is that all the incidents is actually captured prior to release of the product. So, for instance, all of our products come into the warehouse and they're not actually released for sale until we've got that certificate of analysis from HFL. And it's been fantastic, really, in terms of finding new suppliers. It gives us a very robust system to make sure that the practices that they're using, we don't have any risk of contamination. I think it's still important to point out that there isn't still a 100% guarantee. So we can't say no product will not contain any banned substance. I think it's the same in the food industry. You know, you can't sort of say that there's never going to be an incident where you have something in the product that shouldn't be there. But it's the risk management approach that we take to reduce that. So really, in terms of making recommendations now to people who do get tested for banned substances, is to make sure that they use products that are made by reputable companies and use something like the Infinite Sport Programme to make sure that those products are robustly tested and safe. Just to point out here, really, that repeating everything, that this is the logo that you'll find on products. Our products are all tested, but actually on the MaxiClone products, we don't actually hold the logo because it's not something that's relevant to that particular consumer. But it's something, and that's something I've said in the past, well, do we need to still keep testing? And actually, as a business, we've said yes, because there's always the case where, you know, you hear the footballer who's taking his wife's swimming tablets and then tested positive. You know, we just want to make sure we exclude any risk in that way at all. So as a business, you know, we can never be in that position where we might be accused of having that. And I think the important thing to point out is that with the Informed Sport Programme is that every batch gets tested, but there's an A and a B sample. So the A sample gets tested and the B sample gets stored for the duration of the shelf life of that product. So if in that time there is a case where an athlete says, well, I've been taking Promax and I've tested positive, then we can go back and test that sample, and that's where it really gives us the robustness in terms of any litigation processes. I think the other thing to just point out is that there's no room for complacency, though, around the whole drug testing agenda. There's new substances continually in the headlines, and there's been a lot of information, a lot of press coverage around DMAA, methylhexanamine, and really what it is and where it comes from and how it's been labelled on products, and is it or isn't it, should it be banned? It is on the WADA list, but there's still a lot of products that use it. I think it's something that's been picked up in Europe just recently, but in America it's still very widespread use of this. But it's something that did catch the sport nutrition industry out. And it's something that, you know, we're all the time working with HFL to make sure that, and HFL have an advisory panel which keep abreast of new substances that are coming in, any issues that athletes might be testing positive for certain substances. So we have to make sure that we're ahead of that. But I think what is also good is that with the robustness of the system that we're using in terms of new product development, you know that you're not going to be using something that's going to come up on the banned list anyway. So just to finish really by pointing out that GSK as a business, their ambition really is to be the number one fast-moving consumer healthcare company driven by science and values that help people to do more, feel better, and live longer. So it fits very much within the Maxi Nutrition mission statement in terms of really getting people to maximise their potential in terms of sport nutrition. But I think what the nice tie-in here is that GSK London 2012 are the official supplier to the Olympic and Paralympic Games in terms of providing the laboratory services to the Games for the official anti-doping facilities. And that's something that, you know, really sort of puts us very much in the position of keeping ahead of that in terms of the banned substance agenda. So thank you very much for your time, and I'd welcome any questions.